Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
Hi, this is Keith Bishop, author of Slop, The Wild Boar Nation, and you're listening to Carson's Corner, talk radio seeking solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
And welcome to a late-night edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. We're also on the CommonsProjectNetwork.com, which, as of this broadcast, is off the air. It's not on. The website is down. I don't know what the hell happened. I'm really worried about it. Somewhere, there's an elite somewhere, maybe in the Chamber of Commerce or whatever, that has deliberately attacked the site. I'm telling you, someone's business interest was threatened by the content on the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. I know it, folks. I could feel it in my bones. in any event, you know, when that website is up, it has great progressive material from individuals like myself who are fed up with the corporate media, who are fed up with a political system that is designed to benefit the elites, and when it's up, you know, you can get great content on that website. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be part of the program. We also have the chat room open for you as well, and I got to tell you, this is the second broadcast of the night. I started the show at 9 o'clock, right, and I did it for about an hour and a half. We played an update with our great friend Justin Ray Harvey, as we will today, and I found out after the show aired that none of my audio came out. I'm so disappointed. None. It was nothing but deafening silence, nothing but dead air until we played the Justin Ray Harvey update, and I was so depressed. I mean, could you imagine talking for an hour and thinking that people are hearing you live only to realize that you are speaking over dead air, nothing is coming out to the audience. I mean, it was really, really demoralizing. It really, really pissed me off. But in any event, we're here, we're live. That shows you the dedication that I have for this show, that I'm going to speak it again. I'm going to do it all again here on Carson's Corner to give you the content that you really need, that we all really need. I want to start off talking about the filibuster change that has taken place today in the Senate. And, you know, I feel that this is really indicative of where we are as a country right now. And you know, if you listen to the show, that I don't like to talk about the so-called issues that, you know, are affecting us as framed by the corporate media. I do not like talking about, you know, scenery, like, oh, does this healthcare site work, or does that plan work, or what are we going to cut from here, or what are we going to cut from there, and you know, this politician said that about that politician, and this MSNBC host said that about, you know, it doesn't make a difference. Really, it doesn't make a difference, because at the end of the day, this is all scenery. This is given to you by the elites, designed to manufacture or designed to gain consent. It is designed to basically accept the status quo as is without asking any questions. Okay, but the filibuster reform, which was instituted today by Harry Reid and the Democrats, I really feel is important, because it shows you just how bad it is. I mean, you know, things have gotten really bad in this country, not because we have a government, not because, you know, we have laws and regulations. Things have gotten bad in this country because money has infiltrated everything. We have been nullified. And that's what this is all about, is that if you look over the Obama administration, President Obama has been in office since 2008, you will see a record number of filibusters when it comes to executive and judicial nominations. In the history, since the founding of our republic, there has only been 168 filibusters on executives and judicial nominees. And half of those, over 50% of those filibusters, have occurred during President Obama's presidency. Now, what has changed since President Obama has become president? What has changed in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years? Has it been that the Democrats or President Obama has been a leader of a new political movement in this country, a leader of some sort of Maoist or socialist group? Or has it been that the Republican Party has become extremely uncooperative, and they've become extremely, where you say two words that mean the same thing, extremely angry. It's a jumbo shrimp. But in any event, the Republican Party has become fanatical to the point now where just keeping the government open is a moderate position. Just, you know, not abolishing federal agencies, not privatizing agencies, is somehow a moderate position, and who are representing, you know, special interests more so than the Democratic Party. I mean, both parties, we agree, are beholden to special corporate interests. But the Republican Party has used the government to basically nullify everything. Take, for example, Dodd-Frank. Okay, this is something that we've spoken about at length on this program. Dodd-Frank, even though it is tepid regulation against Wall Street banks, it created the Consumer Financial Protection Board, I believe it's called. It created regulation that is designed to limit what credit cards can charge you for interest rates. It created the Volcker Rule, I believe. And other measures designed to protect consumers from banks, which is one of the causes of the 2009 collapse. Now, Dodd-Frank is being nullified. It's part of the law, okay, but it's being nullified by those in the private sector, namely Eugene Scalia, the son of Antonin Scalia, the fascist Supreme Court dictator. This individual is suing in his private law firm, which undoubtedly is ideologically driven. They are suing to make sure that the rules of Dodd-Frank, again, this very mild, tepid piece of legislation, which does not undo or does not reinstate Glass-Steagall. It does not do away with the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, which banned the regulation of derivatives. It does none of that. This law firm is making it impossible for Gary Gensler and the Futures Trading Commission, whatever the office, the title of the office that he represents, it's making it impossible for them to regulate Wall Street. It's making it impossible for the law to really go into effect. And this is basically what we're talking about, how elections and laws really have no meaning anymore, because the very wealthy, special interests, they have say over our laws that are written. They have say over how our laws are enforced, and they have say over, implementation of our laws, which could pretty much amount to the same thing. But, this is what happens when you have a Republican Party, which is essentially a fascist party. If you poll the Republican House members or poll the Republican Senate members, you will find that a majority of these people believe in abolishing the minimum wage. You will find that a majority of these people would eliminate the National Labor Relations Board, which, they essentially did by filibustering several of President Obama's nominees to the National Labor Relations Board. And what happens? You've got almost 100 million of Americans that are essentially at risk because this government agency, which was created after the basically act as a fair arbiter between capital and labor, has been nullified by filibuster. I believe this is the first time, that was the first time in our nation's history, if I'm not mistaken, that the National Labor Relations Board wasn't able to perform its duties. Not that the National Labor Relations Board isn't on the side of corporate America, because every single regulatory agency, every single agency of government is either directly or indirectly under the control of special interests. But the very existence of the National Labor Relations Board is, I would argue, under attack. The very existence of it. And this is a testament to just how extreme the Republican Party has become. You look at issues like guns, okay? How is it that in the United States of America, you have 90% of the population, this was the case after Sandy Hook, 90% of the population that supported universal background checks, okay? And again, I can't stress this enough, 90% of the population supported universal background checks. And yet Congress could not pass any type of law that would require that these checks take place because Congress has been nullified by special interests. I mean, you could just go down the line and look at legislation and look at regulatory agencies that have been nullified, which means that the government becomes useless. The government becomes ineffective. And you know something, we know that the government is effective. We know that the government is a force for good when we, the people, have control over it. You know, government regulations and the so-called free market, they're two separate things, but they're intertwined in the sense that the free market, which really doesn't exist, there is no such thing as a free market. The market has been created by the United States government. The market, which is created by the government, determines, as Robert Rice says, who's going to pay for what is going to be public and what is going to be private, to the extent that copyright laws exist, what is traded. All of these areas exist, you know, because of the United States government. And so the point here is that the government creates a framework by which we all operate, and we rely on that framework, and we take it for granted. You know, we take government agencies for granted, but yet we all depend on government agencies. And what's happening is, and what has happened over the last 30-plus years, is that government has been used by the very wealthy and the elites, which, you know, are the same thing, as a tool to maintain their wealth and basically suppress everybody else. It's what's happening. It's called, you know, Reaganomics, or maybe it's our current form of capitalism here. We're seeing now that what is happening and what is going to continue to happen is government being replaced by private interests. The, you know, abolishment of government, we saw this with the government shutdown, we've seen this all throughout the last 30 years, and the you know, making people believe that it's somehow government that is ineffective. Government is wasteful. Government is this and government is that. And we need to just replace government with private profit companies. And that is what has happened. I mean, you look at the government shutdown, right? The whole purpose of the government shutdown was to make people fed up with government in general. This talking point, government can't do anything right. Government is this. The government is that. And unfortunately, that resonates with a lot of people because of the propaganda model that exists in America. And right-wing fascists like Rush Limbaugh and others have really mastered the art of propaganda. Okay, so, you know, you've got Fox News, which on any given program can get 2 or 3 million viewers, and these viewers end up infecting other people with this, you know, right-wing corporate fascist propaganda. But at the end of the day, it's all about private economic power controlling our lives. And the filibuster is just another tool that these forces have used to nullify the government, which in turn nullifies us. Opponent of this is racism. Okay? You look at, again, I mentioned 168 filibusters of executive and judicial nominees since the history of our republic, right? Half of them have occurred during the Obama administration. So that tells you that we are in uncharted waters. This is unprecedented. And what is happening is, and you know, you could look back, go back to 2009, or go back a year before that. Go back to 2008, when President Obama was nominated. And look at the reaction. You know, look at some of the you know, hate crimes that were happening all across America, and I'm talking about even post-Obama election. You know, you could look at all the various acts of right-wing violence and white outrage over changing demographics of America and our first black president. And you could see this, and then in 2009, you had the Department of Homeland Security report that came out and chronicled the fact that we've seen an explosion in right-wing patriot militia groups out there, the Sovereign Citizen Movement, over 500,000 members. You've got the Southern Poverty Law Center that estimates we have over 1,300 of these groups. And all you have to do is look at, you know, what happened at the LAX airport a couple weeks ago, and look at what happened in Texas with Joe Stack, and a right-wing individual, Tea Party sympathizer, who drove his plane into an IRS building to protest the U.S. tax code. And you could just go down the line, and you could see a really dysfunctional political environment in this country. I mean, as much as I can't stand President Obama, and I can't, okay, President Obama, I stopped supporting him in 2008. It became apparent to me in 2008. I stopped supporting President Obama in 2010. Because you recall that year we had the extension of the Bush tax cuts, which President Obama railed against. We had the freezing of pay of federal workers. You want to know why the economy is hurting in some states? It's because federal workers don't have the money to spend to help the economy. That has a lot to do with it. We've seen cutbacks in Republican-controlled states of federal workers. And without these cutbacks, the unemployment rate, if that's any measure to go by, would be much lower than it is now. And President Obama in 2010 subscribed to the notion that somehow federal workers, the pay of federal workers is bogging down the economy. And so he froze the pay of federal workers. And then you had the Affordable Care Act. This was a right-wing piece of legislation created by the Heritage Foundation. Okay, the Mitt Romney actually implemented this in Massachusetts and said that he hoped that this would be a model for the nation, and it turned out he was absolutely right. The Affordable Care Act came from the Heritage Foundation in terms of the exchange. It was approved by the healthcare CEOs and the healthcare industry as a whole, which saw their stock, you know, rise after the passage of this legislation. It's a disaster. Obama judged the for-profit health insurance companies as being part of the problem with our healthcare delivery system. And yet, you know, his reform mandates that all of us in one shape or form buy for-profit health insurance from a for-profit company. And that was when I really stopped supporting President Obama. And I've been railing against him, for what it's worth, not very much, but on this program, you know, on my soapbox or whatever you want to call it. But that, all of this, and the fact that we have a corporate, you know, a Democrat in the White House, all of this does not negate the inherent racism within the Tea Party, and does not negate the fact that a majority of white America is uncomfortable with the direction that this country is taking in terms of a change in demographics. There's just absolutely no question about this. You've got the Republican Party, a majority in the Republican Party, and an overwhelming majority in the Tea Party, believing that President Obama was not born in the United States. If you poll the Republicans and ask them if they think that that President Obama was born in the United States, you'll see a majority of them say no. We have congressmen to this day still suggesting that President Obama was not born in the United States. If you poll the Tea Party, an overwhelming majority of them will believe that Obama was not born in the United States. You have the president being called a liar in front of a joint address in Congress by Congressman Joe Wilson, right? Is that his name, Joe Wilson? When has that ever happened before? When have we ever seen anything like that? We have know, individuals like Ted Nugent, as we talked about last week on this show with Keith Bishop, author of the book Slop, The Wild Boar Nation. Ted Nugent, who unfortunately is a popular voice within the Republican Party. This is a guy who probably has more power than the speakership within the Republican Party. This is a guy who was invited to, was it 2013, Obama's State of the Union address. It's a guy who writes for the Washington Times. He speaks at these right-wing conventions, CPAC and whatnot, on record as saying that President Obama couldn't even be his tour bus driver. You have the Tea Party. Again, the Southern Poverty Law Center and other tracking groups has noted the connection between the Tea Party and various white supremacist groups, namely the Council of Conservative Citizens. You've got Tea Party leaders, Tea Party groups, you know, releasing racist emails depicting the president as a witch doctor and even, you know, comparing him to an animal. I mean, you know, you could just go down the line. So you could see this racism within the Tea Party, and you could see how this has bled over into the political process. And the corporate media will never, ever tell you that. The corporate media will never tell you that the Tea Party, it's not that they're making racist comments. It's not that, you know, more Tea Party people are offended by the LGBT flag than they are the Confederate flag. They will basically ignore the fact that these people are inherently racist. They are fundamentally racist. And the polls back that up. The polls bear that. And so, you know, this president really has had to deal with a lot that no other president has had to deal with. And in many ways, you know, President Obama is a victim of the political climate that exists in America that is being brought to us by, you know, right-wing libertarian forces, the very forces that win no matter what happens with elections. They win. They absolutely win. I mean, you know, if you don't believe me, just look at the current state of affairs right now. Look at how the fact that these libertarian forces, the objective forces, you know, the Ayn Rand subscribers, the Milton Friedman subscribers, right, the most evil among us, in my opinion, those that are responsible for structural violence, okay, they win because, you know what? What have we done over the past 3 or 4 years? Have we invested in our economy? Have we raised the minimum wage, even though almost 3/4 of Americans support such an idea? Have we, you know, stopped our destructive trade policies? Absolutely not. We've cut spending. We've cut government spending. We've, you know, experienced the sequestration cuts, which President Obama really was responsible for because he created the model for austerity in the first place. That's right. President Obama created the model for austerity. And we have a so-called liberal president in the White House. Does that make any sense? Do you see how they win? They win no matter what happens because the real power in Washington, D.C. is exercised in the smoke-filled rooms, the restaurants, and other areas where lobbyists and these, you know, special interests can control our government. And, you know, on top of that, you know, the fact that the government has done nothing but cut spending, which is adversarial to economic growth, top that off, you've got a majority of Americans that believe that spending has increased, that we're spending too much money, that spending is the problem in Washington, D.C., even though all evidence says otherwise. Doesn't that show you how they're just winning on every single front, whether it's policy, whether it's perception? They're winning because they have the money and influence to get their propaganda out there. And it's one of the reasons why you'll never hear anything to the contrary, very rarely, on the corporate-owned and corporate-driven media. If you hear somebody in the corporate-owned or corporate-driven media, they'll be talking just for a few minutes, just to get the talking points out there and not a full analysis of the issues, because that won't make it Brit filtering system. And that's very, very important. And that's why, individuals who have a similar viewpoint to myself are ostracized. People like Noam Chomsky. Have you seen Noam Chomsky on a Sunday show? Have you seen him on Dateline or any of these other programs? Maybe once in a while, not often. Do you see, individuals like myself in terms of economic status on any of the programs, particularly the Sunday shows? No. What do you see? You see corporate think tank people, right? You see people that are upholding the establishment, people that are millionaires and are far removed from you and I giving their take on issues. And it's really unfortunate, but it's what we've got going on here in this country. And so that's why I think this, nullification is very important, because they have the power to nullify the government. And, we all recognize that the government is a force for good in America. People like government. People consent to the functions of government. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the most ardent libertarian supporter or if you're an anarchist. You consent to government power. I don't know anybody that doesn't have a friggin' bank account. I don't know anybody that doesn't eat in a public restaurant. I don't know anybody that doesn't drive in one form or another on the public roads. I don't know anybody that doesn't, shop at a big box retailer or whatever, fill in the blank. I don't know anybody that doesn't feel comforted knowing that we have a police force. We have a fire department. We have a first aid squad. We have a military. All of these different things are essentially socialism, because anybody has the ability, regardless of the money that they make and the taxes that they pay, to enjoy these services. And so, we all depend on the government. The government is everything in America. The government provides a framework in which you and I operate, okay? Where we see this successful, where we see this enjoyed by the American people, is under attack by the private special interests. So, it's important. I mean, you could see this with the Affordable Care Act right now. And this is what's happening. And it's unfortunate, but, this is what we have in America, where the Affordable Care Act, the perception is that it's a disaster. It's everywhere you go. The polling numbers, it's in the tank. And it's probably not going to get a positive reception because it's pretty much, set in stone. It was never a popular piece of legislation because of the individual mandate. All the other provisions are popular if you poll the American people one by one. But it's not popular. It's never going to be popular. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong, but, Medicare was working. People had their Medicare cards 1 year, I believe, after the passage of Medicare. And now these programs are enjoyed by the vast majority of Americans, yet they're under attack by the special interests, because the vast majority of Americans, their opinion does not matter. It just matters what the business community wants to do. So the business community has decided that, we need to privatize these programs. It's just a matter of when. Just a matter of when we privatize these programs. But what's going to happen now, and you could see this already, is that this is going to give the business community more of an excuse to privatize everything because, again, perception is reality. If people perceive that government can't work, even though government has nothing to do with this law, I mean, the law, it's private for-profit insurance companies that make up the foundation of our healthcare system in America. Yeah, the government is running the website, or they had to, you know, contract a for-profit company to run the website, and we all know that, you know, the government throughout our history has been responsible for many great things. The Manhattan Project, Keith Bishop spoke about this, the Marshall Plan, Social Security, Medicare. The government is amazing at doing things, but yet, you know, we have perception is reality, and now as a result of the Affordable Care Act blunders, you're going to see someone, you know, maybe like Governor Christie, maybe even more conservative than he is, take control and completely privatize these systems because that is in the works. This is what is happening in America. So, I mean, could you imagine, you know, we have President Obama in the White House and the special interests are already in control, maybe not as much in control as they would be if someone like Chris Christie or fill in the blank was in control. Could you imagine how much worse it'll be for us? I mean, could you imagine the disparity between rich and poor and all the social ills that brings when, you know, whatever Republican gets elected in 2016? Because the American people, by and large, are inundated. They're inundated with football, right? Spent all day watching NFL Sunday. They're inundated with reality TV or fill in the blank, anything to get them to not listen or not have a structural analysis. And that's, you know, that's what's going to happen now. You know, that this is going to be an excuse for the special interests to privatize just about everything in America. And privatization, in a sense, is a crime. Privatization is, it's morally wrong, it's inefficient, and I'm talking about privatization over, you know, certain resources, privatization over certain sectors of our economy, okay? You know, there's nothing wrong with somebody opening up a business. I don't believe that we should nationalize all businesses and, you know, turn it over to the state. But privatization, again, over human life, which is what we have, is wrong, and it's wasteful, it's inefficient, and that's the road we're going down here, where we're going to see more private economic control over the masses. And I just see the Affordable Care Act as basically a Trojan horse for, again, the privatization of things like Social Security, Medicare, fill in the blank, because that's what the business community wants. America is a business. We are not a democracy, okay? America is a goddamn business where workers, individuals, people like you and I have no rights. We are disposable. And those at the top of the economic pyramid, they have all the say. They have all the power. And so whatever benefits them goes. And, you know, if a few crumbs trickle down to you and I, it's great. But they, you know, are only interested in maximizing their profit and getting more wealthy. And so that's why we're headed towards where we're headed right now. You know, it's because the special interests have made a decision to maximize profit regardless of the social costs. In fact, the social costs don't even factor into the equation. It doesn't even matter. You know, the quality of life in America, poverty, you know, rates of mental illness, rates of incarceration, all of these different things, they're ruled out by default. It doesn't matter. I mean, go pick up a newspaper. Go watch the corporate media. Does the media judge progress by how many people are living in poverty? Does the media judge progress by, you know, how many people are incarcerated? Does the media judge progress by the number of people living in poverty? No. It's all about business. It's all about the stock market and corporate profits and rates of inflation and this thing and that thing. You know, you and I are just discarded. We're tossed into the trash can because we really don't matter. And that's a real problem. You know, it's just one more example of just how bad it is in this country, where it doesn't matter. America, as I've always said, is a line. It's a line full of people, and the wealthiest people get served first, and the individual at the back of the line who's making, you know, 100% less than a wealthy person doesn't have their needs met. Because, again, we're more concerned about the flow of money. We're more concerned about the movement of money than we are of human life. And that's, you know, I don't know whether or not that's because we've allowed that to take place or whether or not it's because it's been dictated to us. But in any event, I mean, this current economic system is really not working for many people right now. And you'll never hear that on the corporate media. You will never hear someone go so far as to say that, hey, capitalism is not working. Something wrong with our current form of capitalism here, okay? We have fundamental assumptions in our country that are just outright wrong and ignore the needs of the vast majority of all Americans, really. And that has to be challenged. Because if you had that type of discussion in the corporate media, then there would be so much flack that it would be shut down rather quickly. It would. So, you know, that's why it's important to tune into shows like this and others that will really give you a structural analysis and really get things outside of the corporate box, outside of what you see, hear, or read in corporate media. Because chances are, if you're absorbing corporate media, it's coming to you from one of six companies. Whether you're reading it, whether you're hearing it, whether you're seeing it, it's one of six companies. And again, that should really alarm everybody, just the media consolidation and the overall consolidation of just about every industry. You know, we used to have a manufacturing sector in America. We used to have, you know, community banks in America. We used to have actual local businesses in America, not just service industries, not just doctor's offices and you know, this service or that service, but we had, you know, businesses that made things and whatnot. And now, I mean, that's all gone. It is all gone, and it's been replaced by corporate America. It has been placed by the business elites. So now, you know, as consumers, and that's what we are, we're consumers. We're not citizens. We're consumers. We don't have any choices anymore. We have nothing. I mean, you know, there was, I think it was one statistic that says that Walmart, I think almost every American or something to this effect, it just – lives 15 minutes away from a Walmart. You know, you've got 60 million Americans shopping at Walmart. Okay, now if that's not a monopoly, I don't know what is. But that is what is dictated to us. That is what happens. And when you shop at these corporations, because you're forced to, and I'm not saying I'm above the fray, you're contributing to an economic system is stealing from you and rewarding the investor class and rewarding the Walton family, which controls 30% of our nation's wealth. It's just disgusting. It really is. But it all goes back to the nullification of our government. You don't like a law. You don't like the color of someone's skin. Whatever the case is, you can nullify it. And the corporate elites have ways to nullify just about everything. As I said, elections do not matter in America. They do not matter. Now, I want to go back to the racism here, because as I said, there is inherent racism with regards to the opposition towards President Obama. And I want to really underscore that fact, because that plays into all of this. You know, we see this with economics being discussed, right? We see that welfare, how we look at welfare in America. And this is pretty much universal among white America. We view welfare as only applying to minorities, right? Blacks, Hispanics. And we blame welfare recipients, and this is true, for our economic decline. In other words, the problem is that Americans are lazy. We're not working hard enough. We become, quote, a welfare state. If you go back during the Clinton administration, the corporate media was telling everybody that, oh, just about everybody agrees that the nation's welfare system is out of control and has to be curbed, right? The elites have basically decided that we're a lazy nation. They've basically decided that the problem with America is that we're just not working hard enough. We've got too many people that are dependent on the government, and we have too big of a pension system. That's the problem with America. It's not greed. It's not the corporate profits. It's not an out-of-control tax system that is ballooned up to 70,000. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. And they have convinced, I would venture to say, a majority of Americans, particularly white Americans, that this is the problem with America, that it's black people, it's Hispanics, it's Mexicans that are coming over and taking our jobs and taking welfare benefits, and I'm working so somebody else doesn't have to. This is the meme that is constantly pushed out there by folks on Fox News and right-wing talk radio. And so that is racism. It is using a minority, putting down a minority to advance an economic agenda that, robs from everybody else and gives to the top 1%. And, it's everywhere. Racism is everywhere in America. What happened after the 2009 collapse? What happened? Who did the right wing try to blame? Did they try to blame the banks, the Wall Street firms that knowingly sold toxic mortgages to their customers? Did they try to blame the effort and the eventual success of deregulation, which was sponsored by people like Phil Graham, Republican senator from Texas, or even some previously in the Obama administration, Larry Summers, Tim Geithner, Robert Rubin, or all the other, Ken Lay, or all the other deregulators? Did they blame them for what happened in 2009? No, they blame the minority. They blame the black man, right? I mean, didn't we hear this from people like Lawrence Kudlow of CNBC, how, you know, irresponsible, how banks were forced to lend to minorities, right? You heard this Community Reinvestment Act, which is just an absolute canard. And this is a double whammy for the elites because they get to blame minorities, which they love to scapegoat, and they get to blame the United States government. And it works with low information, stupid people that watch Fox News and listen to right-wing talk radio. And even, you know, look, as long as this ridiculousness gets pumped into the discourse out there, it's still, they win. Because, as I said, perception is reality in America. You know, if you can get a significant percentage of Americans believing that somehow it was minorities that crashed the economy in 2009, you know, it's welfare and banks are being forced to lend to minorities, then guess what? We don't look at the banksters. We don't look at regulating these banks and regulating Wall Street. Nope, that's ruled out by default. You know, I mean, it's just, you could just go down the line. It's racism being used against us to maintain economic supremacy. And it all started with Ronald Reagan. I mean, you could go back obviously before that, but in modern times, institution of or the implementation of racism in our political discourse really went into overdrive with Ronald Reagan. And you'll recall that Ronald Reagan gave a speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the site where three civil rights workers were murdered, about states' rights. And he was giving a speech to an all-white audience. And then his, you know, myth, his welfare queen myth and all of this is just really, you know, Reagan understood that there was white America that was disenfranchised, white America that was resentful towards minorities, and he could capitalize on that. And I'm telling you, that strain of thought still exists in America, and there's still enough white people out there demographically to keep these people in office and to, you know, to allow the special interests, the Koch brothers and others, to maintain economic supremacy overall. And that's eventually going to change. Party has made it so elections don't matter. They've made it so that the whole system has just been pulled their way. Elections don't matter anymore. They really don't. I mean, after the government reopened, was it last month, right? We had a government shutdown for 17 days. The Republicans, quote, compromised by allowing the government to remain open. They agreed to a debt ceiling raise, right? And after that, the fascist groups like the Chamber of Commerce, the Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, and other fascist groups that would eliminate child labor laws, they would eliminate minimum wage laws. They're just the very worst, the most evil among us, in my opinion. They came out against the reopening of the government. And they vowed to primary challenge those that voted to keep open the government. And so what happens is, and what is happening is, the Republican Party is essentially purging itself of less fanatical members. And so elections don't matter because, you know, if you've got one party that is essentially a moderate Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and you've got another party that is turning into a fascist party, what does that do to the discussion? You know, it's like negotiating with a crazy person where, you know, somebody is holding a gun to your head and they say, do this, that, and the other thing. Well, you're going to do it. You're going to start to do some irrational things. And that is just what has happened to the economic system in America. It's what has happened to the political system in America. And I don't see it getting better anytime soon. And it's going to take a crash to really get people to understand, to make people feel enough pain to do something about it. Because I don't agree with Peter Joseph when he says that we can have awareness. Awareness will ultimately lead to a revolution. No, awareness is not going to lead to a revolution because the American public is distracted and will remain distracted as long as, you know, our current system is in place right now. And it's going to take a collapse to make people feel enough pain to get involved with the political process and to really have a structural analysis for things to change. That's what's going to happen. It's not going to, you know, happen, you know, anytime soon or right now. You know, we thought, I'll be honest with you, I thought, I was one of the many millions of Americans who thought in 2008 that the election of President Obama was the beginning of the revolution, you know? This is a guy who ran a very populist campaign, and we all kind of deluded ourselves for a little while. I snapped out of it 2 years into his administration. Many people haven't, but you know what? That's what happened. But, you know, we should have realized that when President Obama was not changing the fundamentals of the economy, that he's doomed for failure. Okay? And so this leaves us now where we're in many ways worse off than when President Obama came into office. So I know statistically in the months of job growth and the stock market, right, and maybe a few million more Americans will get health insurance, but by and large, the economy is still the same. The wealth and income consolidation are still the same. And those, I believe, are the two most important factors when assessing the current state of our economy and current state of our democracy. In fact, it's probably gotten worse. The top 1% have probably accumulated more wealth since President Obama's been in office. They've certainly gotten all the income growth over the past 4 or 5 years. They've certainly recovered more quickly than anybody from the financial collapse. And all of that is by design. It's not an accident. But, you know, I mean, Obama hasn't changed the fundamentals of the economy. The only way that we're going to change the fundamentals of the economy is if capitalism melts down so bad, so much, that we pick up the pieces and we contain business. We contain the ideology that has been at the core of our economic policies for the last 30-plus years, and that is Ayn Rand objectivism. It is rooted in all of our economic policies, and it's an evil ideology that says that, you know, it's a very, very objective society, way it goes. The wealthy are wealthy because they're smarter, they're better, they're harder working, and we need to eliminate government force. You know, government laws are an instrument of force. Labor laws are an instrument of force. Wages are an instrument of force, and they should be eliminated. And we should all be run by the billionaires because, you know, they're smarter. They're harder working than everybody else. And they deserve all the success. And they're the productive members of society. And you and I are just leeches. You know, we're just parasites living off of their wealth. We just exist in their country. They own it. We just live here. And it's this belief, it's this set of principles that has really been at the core of our economic policies for the last, you know, 30-plus years. And it's only getting stronger. It's only getting, you know, worse and worse and worse for all of us. And once we reject that notion, once we really say, okay, you know what? It's a crime in America for somebody to have $1 billion. Once we say it's a crime in America for someone to have a 40-room goddamn mansion. It's a crime in America for a CEO to be paid 500 times his lowest worker. It's a crime in America for us to spend trillions of dollars bailing out banks while allowing our citizens to rot in poverty. All of these are crimes. They should be looked at as crimes. They should be, you know, not tolerated in our society. But instead, we don't look at them as crimes. We look at them as, you know, progress, as we equate that with freedom in America. Somehow, somebody making $1 billion, that represents freedom in America. I disagree. That represents greed. That represents someone pulling so much money out of the money supply that his grandparents, grandparents, grandparents' kids, and even down the line, won't even be able to spend it. I look at that person as essentially robbing me and robbing you, depriving us of the money that we need to survive. That's what I look. And that's how we should start looking at these things. We should start rejecting the yardsticks that the corporate media uses in which to, you know, gauge progress. Why should I care about Wall Street? Why should I care about, you know, their stock prices? Why should I care about corporate profits? Why should I care about, you know, Black Friday sales? What bearing does that have on my life? Because as we've seen in America, as the GDP goes up, as corporations become more wealthy, and the very wealthy become even more wealthy, it gets worse for us. It gets worse for you and I, because there is no correlation between living in a rich nation and the quality of life. And that's what we have to measure progress on, not what, on what some CEO makes, not on, you know, the earnings of business, stock prices, the movement of money. It should be measured on how we are living in terms of, you know, health, in terms of poverty, relative poverty, in terms of income inequality, and so on and so forth. Because I will tell you, if you look at economic data, when the top 1% of income earners earn 24% of overall income, depending upon which estimate you look at, 21, 24, 25%, and almost half of the nation's wealth, that breeds, you know, political polarization. That breeds all sorts of problems associated with living in an unequal society, okay? And that's what we have in America. So we need to look at that number and say, okay, 1% of the population earns 24% of the overall income. And I mean, you could even break it down. You could look at 1/10 of 1%, how much they earn. And you could just break it down and you reverse that trend. And when you reverse that trend, and that's going to be very difficult because that money is going to people that control everything. That money is going to the media executives, the CEOs, the defense contractors, the oil barons, the fill in the blank, people that, you know, I mean, have always existed throughout our society, the elites. Once you reverse that trend, you will see life in America become much more tolerable. You're always going to have a wealthy elite. The only difference is how much income and how much wealth are they going to control. And that's very, very important. Wow, I can't believe this hour went by that quickly. It has been over an hour since we've been on the air. That is unbelievable. And I got some emails here. But, you know, it just, we touched on a lot of different things, but this is where we're at here in America. And it doesn't look good. So now the Democrats can approve some you know, executive branch and judicial nominees. But really, what does that mean in a sense? Because, you know, Sonia Sotomayor is considered a liberal by today's standards. But if you look at Sonia Sotomayor and her views on capitalism, if you look at her views on whether or not workers have the mobility that capital does, she's no liberal by any stretch of the imagination. Certainly not, you know, as progressive as people from the past, labor leaders of the past. And that's also been part of the problem. And, you know, this is one of the things that Joe Burns writes about in his book, Reviving the Strike, one of the best labor books that I've read that really takes a critical look at labor. He talks about how, you know, we're all really conservative when it comes to, you know, what we accept and what we don't accept. And you know, today's organized labor is more conservative than, you know, labor was a generation ago. And it's because of this thinking. It's because of somehow, you know, when we avoid cuts to public unions or we avoid, you know, a slash in workers' benefits, we view that as a victory. That's somehow a victory. No, it's not a victory. It's not a victory. A victory would be, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But that's all part of the problem. So you get someone like Sonia Sotomayor, who's really not that much more of a working class person, although she did grow up in the Bronx, than, you know, those on the other side. So that's just a whole other discussion. But you can understand what I'm saying here, where it's like, even with this reform, it still is not going to make that much of a difference. It's all going to be dependent upon a crash, which is what we need here. We need a crash, folks, and we need to reboot the economy, as Tom Hartman has said. And Tom Hartman has a book called Crash of 2016. I want to get the book. I will eventually, but, you know, all very important stuff. It all really is. All right, without further ado, I'm going to play you an update that we had with Justin Ray Harvey. Justin Harvey, our good friend, has had some medical problems. And where the hell is it? Do I have it here? It should be here somewhere. I know I played it on my last show, and I hope I didn't. I don't think I deleted it, but here it is. Yeah, good. All right, I'm going to play you an update with Justin Ray Harvey, and this is how we're going to end the show. So let me just tell you how you could friend me. You could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you could check out the show and other progressive content on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.
You rang.
Hey, what's up, young?
Hey, Bob, what's going on, brother?
Hey, we're recording right now. I just rebooted my my computer, and it said Skype recording, so...
Holy shit, we're recording?
We are recording now, that I can guarantee you.
Awesome. So, you want to talk about what we talked about the other day, but it, like, fucking failed to record?
Yeah, like, just, you know, give people an update and everything like that, and then I'll put it, play right on the show.
Okay, well, basically what's going on, Bob, is the reason I quit doing my radio shows and the political show / MMA show, Carson's Corner, is because I've been having acid reflux for several nights for about, I'd say, 3 months now, and I went to my doctor, and basically, he thinks that, now this is just speculation, this has not been determined yet. He seems to think I have a hernia, you know, like a, I'm trying to think of the type it is,
What's the word I'm looking for, Bob?
I really don't know.
Trying to think of it, but anyway, basically it's a hernia, but he told me that I need to go to a gastro doctor in December. So basically what's probably going to happen is the scope will probably be run down my throat so that they can look at my stomach, and then we'll go from there. And it's possible if I do have this hernia, I may need a surgery that can be done. So, but if everything goes as I'm planning, I'm hoping to return back to everything within January of 2014. So.
Now, when do you go to the doctor again? The end of December?
I think it's at the very beginning of December. I just can't remember the exact date.
Okay, and from there you'll find out whether or not you have a hernia and what needs to be done after that.
Yeah, because I think what they're going to do is they'll probably want to run a scope down my throat and look inside my stomach and stuff. So, fun time, right, Bob?
Yeah, right. I mean, well, you know what? We wish you the best. We really do. I know that you've had difficult medical situations over the years, and it doesn't seem to end with you. So we're all kind of hoping for the best possible outcome in this scenario.
Yeah, and basically I wanted to let your listeners know that, you know, I've not gone anywhere, you know, and me and Bob have not had a falling out or anything. It's just with my health going on and me coughing and hacking, and I just, when I do my radio stuff, I want to make it as fun and professional as possible, because, you know, if I'm going to be hacking on the air, it's going to be, like, you know, embarrassing and stupid for me, you know, because Bob knows me best. When I produce something, I want to produce the very best.
Right.
So, and I also wanted to give your listeners a little brain teaser. Me and Bob are working on a secret project that could possibly change things for Carson's Corner, but for the better.
That's right. Yeah, we've been talking about this for a few weeks now, and it's just a matter of hammering out all the details and everything, just the logistics of it. So it should be fun.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. And you know, I know I'm not as popular as Dan Quinn is with, you know, his updates, but I hope that your listeners, you know, kind of enjoy hearing me back, sort of, you know, to at least know that I'm still alive and I'm still kicking. It's just that this health thing has me down, so.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the case, that there are a lot of people out there just, you know, curious as to what's going on with your situation and everything like that. But, you know, it's good to hear from you. It's good to give the fans out there an update. And like I said, you know, we hope that when you go to the doctor, the problem that you're experiencing right now is not too severe. And, you know, we hope that you can continue on, you know, just living without so much disruption.
Absolutely, Bob, because what kills me is I'm used to being on the political show each and every week, and it is just killing me, brother. It's killing my soul, because that is something that I love to do. I mean,
right. It
is something that I was born to do, and right now I can't do it to my 100% like I want to do it.
Right.
It's killing my soul, and, you know, and it killed me a couple weeks ago, because I was so sick that I had to cancel a video interview with Gordon Ratusa.
Right.
And I'm supposed to be video interviewing the producer of Kickboxer, David Wirth, but depending on how I'm feeling, I may even have to push that back. And that was very hard to schedule because David Worth's time is very precious and limited. So
right.
We'll have to see what happens there. So.
Yeah, it must be very, very difficult, everything.
And I also have to get my heart checked too, Bob, because I told you that we discussed the other day that I can't really say that I have a heart condition, but I have, the doctors say that I have tachycardia where I'll be in a car and my heart just races and races till I fucking puke my guts out or, you know, it feels more like a panic attack though than anything else, Bob.
Yeah.
What it feels like. But what was interesting is my doctor seems to think since I have this hernia maybe, he's thinking that this hernia is what's causing my heart to act up and give me so much trouble, which, like I said, we don't know 100% that that's what that is, but I just found that to be, you know, interesting that could be part of the problem, that it might be, you know, somehow putting pressure to irritate my heart.
Yeah. When are you getting that checked out?
I should be getting my heart checked out, I think, in December, around the same time as it's the same time as the gastro doctor.
Okay.
So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, right now, health-wise, I'd say I'm pretty fucked up, but, you know, I'll be back, you know, I'll be doing what I do best, and, you know, and Bob's got it covered, folks. So, I mean, because Bob can just talk and talk for hours just by himself. I mean,
on the political show, yes. The MMA show, not as much. But in any event, you know, we definitely need you back on the show because, you know, sometimes it's not fun just talking all the time. And you and I, you know, one thing will never change is that we'll always have great chemistry on the air and just mm-hmm. in general. And that's very important, so.
Yeah, because when I was first absent, well, the first thing that, you know, jumped in my mind was, I wonder if anybody notices that I'm missing, you know, I mean, that just had crossed my mind because we have been doing this for a couple years now together.
Right.
So, and there are some trolls that hate us, and then there are people that, you know, love us, but it comes with the territory.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, but the most important thing is anybody's overall health. That's what comes first.
Oh yeah, and you know, and it makes me think of our wonderful so-called president because, you know, he's wanting to make all these changes and stuff. I would be screwed and have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars for health care if we get this, you know, like this privatizing this and that. And, you know, having this hernia, folks, if it is a hernia, it's like having a freaking Obama in your fucking stomach. It's that irritating.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know what the situation is in your state, West Virginia. You know, it's different in all states and whatnot, but nobody should ever have to go bankrupt or spend thousands of dollars or go into debt because they don't have health care or there's some sort of a lack of coverage in their health care, and that's absolutely wrong. But
oh absolutely, and yeah, you know, and I hope to get better soon because I want to, you know, I want to get better for the holidays and stuff because here lately I just haven't been enjoying eating even, Bob. I mean, it's
really,
it's that awful.
Yeah, that sounds really bad.
Yeah, so I mean, something's not right with my body. I just don't know what is going on, and it's very frustrating to be away from Carson's Corner, because Carson's Corner, you know, is a big part of me, and it helps with my depression and everything, and it's just, I don't have that outlet right now.
Right. Yeah, it's therapeutic for me too, and that's probably the most important thing of the show.
And I'm gonna go ahead and make an announcement, Bob. Which I'll touch base more on this on a later date. But you know, just to let people know how strong I am, I'm actually a sexual assault survivor.
Right.
Bob. I mean, not many people know about that online, Bob. I mean, you heard it here first, folks. I mean, yes, it is shocking and something that y'all may not want to hear on Carson's Corner, but here soon when I return, I'm going to go into much detail as much as I can and let you know how the court system fucked me over.
Yeah, and you never disclosed that on your show at all, Justin?
Never. This is the first time I've said anything publicly, Bob. Publicly.
Wow.
So.
Well, you know, it's that shouldn't happen to anybody, and I think it's important for our lawmakers to really make sure that happens the least amount of times possible. And the way we do that, you know, I'm in favor of basically harsh penalties, even harsher penalties for individuals that commit sexual assault. And, you know, if you look at sexual assault is worse than terrorism.
Yes,
you know,
because I don't care who you are. If you're somebody that experiences it, you can have your best days in life, but you never get over it. No matter if you're 50 years old, no matter if you're 100 years old, the only way that it's completely done with is in the afterlife, because you live with it every day of your life after it happens.
Mm. Yeah, that's certainly got to be true. And, you know, the thing is that there are enhanced penalties for different types of sexual assault. If you sexually assault, you know, a handicapped or a disabled person or a mentally retarded person, then there is an increased penalty. But what I say is that you should be, maybe if we have mandatory minimums for sexual assault, you know, 20 years, 30 years, and I'm sure some states even have this, just real tough sentencing guidelines, that would deter people from doing it. And then, you know, certainly with these types of crimes, Justin, the recidivism rate is through the roof, because it's not like any other type of crime. It's not like, you know, a bank robbery or this and that. It's a crime that keeps on occurring among sick individuals that cannot be treated. I mean, you could treat a drug addict, but somebody that's a sexual predator, you can't treat them. I don't think we should treat them. I think we should discourage that as a society. And the way to do that is to lock them up and throw away the key. Or if you even want to take it a step further, and I have no problem with this, and, you know, you can even give some of these people the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly, Bob. And let me explain something to your audience here. The one thing is, law enforcement freaking failed me, Bob, okay? Because I gave my statement, I pressed charges, and I was not notified of a hearing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And also, the policeman that took my statement did not show up for the trial date either. So, therefore, that person was released, and I tried and tried to get a prosecution done, and nothing had been done. And I got to thinking the other day. I said, what would I have done differently? The only thing that I would have done differently, Bob, instead of keeping things quiet, I would have contacted CNN, anybody.
Yeah, but you know what, though, Justin? I you know, hindsight is 20/20. But how were you to know that the authorities are just going to completely bundle this back then? I mean, is that why you kept it quiet, because you thought the authorities were going to do their job and everything?
Well, the reason why I was trying to keep it quiet, Bob, was to, you know, I felt, even though it wasn't my fault, I felt shameful.
Right, okay.
I didn't want my friends to know, and some of my family to know. But if I had to do it over again, I would have done things differently. I would have been like, oh well, I'm gonna contact, you know, this and this and this and this, because, you know, when an injustice is done, it's just, you gotta do what you can to get justice. And even though I do not have justice in a lot of ways, I will have justice one way or the other. So.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I survived, and you know, not a lot of people survive. And I'm also going to talk about the subject in my book, and I think, Bob, no, I'm not saying this for a fact, I think that my state tried to hide this because when I was sexually assaulted, this was at a state facility.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, So I think there was a lot of politics to do with that as well, Bob.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it could be.
Yeah. So, because I'm not gonna say what place, but it was a state facility. So.
Yeah.
And all I was trying to do was, you know, get ready to take college courses and then. And then try to get my body in physical condition to where I could have my own apartment.
I see.
And you're gonna laugh at this, Bob. These people were so stupid at this place that they called me in the big meeting, this big ass meeting, and said, "You need to get your GED," and I said, "Excuse me?" They're like, "Yeah, you need to get your GED." And I had completed high school, Bob, and I told them that before, and even sent those bastards my transcripts, and they still said that I needed my GED.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they were very unorganized and very, very unprofessional, Bob. That, and what gets me, Bob, is they told me that radio was not a feasible job for me, that food service would be better, be a better job for me.
Well,